Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Ben Jackson. I'll be your host as per usual. This time it's just Scott, as unfortunately Joris is ill, so we're sending him his best wishes. But Scott, how are you feeling this evening?
I think I'm feeling a little bit better than our Joris by the sounds of it. So get well soon, Joris. Hello, everybody. Hope you're all well.
Yeah, absolutely. We do wish him all the best. Also, a slight apology that this is a little bit later than we usually do, but we just wanted to wait for last night's game between Union and Antwerp, last night as of recording that is, because obviously it was going to have big implications on what we spoke about. So it seemed a little bit pointless just ignoring it and then coming back to it next week. So we thought we'd give it a little bit of time and enjoy that one. However, I think to start this episode, kind of looking back at the weekend, Scott, we should probably jump forward a little bit rather than starting chronologically. We're going to go for the cup final because it probably was the most important game played this weekend for obvious reasons, with the trophy up for grabs. Mechelen against Antwerp. Obviously, Antwerp coming into this as hot favourites. Although Mechelen had started to play a lot better leading up to the game. So it was starting to think, oh, okay, maybe we're going to have a tight cup final. We did have a tight cup final. Not much between the sides to start the game. I mean, it was, yeah, feeling each other out, I guess you could say. But Antwerp did take the lead in the 35th minute. This came after a nice counter-attack from them. Muya getting the ball, running into someone. The ball kind of finding its way across to you and oncoming Ekelen Kamp. Not the first time in the past 7 days that he's made an impact breaking from deep. He gets the ball first. Wolters gets there second. He takes out Ekelen Kamp. Penalty to Antwerp. Janssen steps up and in the excitement of the cup final just runs up and takes the penalty before the referee's even blown his whistle. So obviously that had to be retaken. He stuck it to Kuk's right. On the retake, he sticks it to Kuk's left. Keeper guesses the same way each time, but the penalties were both so, so good. Into the bottom corner, Janssen makes it 1-0. Mechelen then had a couple of chances. They'd finished the game with no shots on target, but there were a couple ones that were close to being on target and going in. Rob Schoofs twice, one taking a massive deflection off Calvin Stengs, the other just going over the bar. We kind of spoke a little bit when we spoke with the guys from the Vakanta Pal about it was going to be down to a Rob Schoofs special if Mechelen were going to score. However, no one scored until the 80th minute. Antwerp did have a couple more chances, but Kuk was in good form to keep them out. Then, as Mechelen were pushing, Antwerp break. Stengs gets it on the left. He whips it across to Michel Ange Balakwisha, who'd come on in the second half, and he makes it 2-0. Ekelen Kamp almost scored after that as well. They had another chance again on the break with Stengs, but they couldn't quite find the back of the net. Finish 2-0 to Antwerp. Deserved win, I think we can say. And the first trophy, but for them, Scott, it's they're hoping it's the first of two.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because news came today that there was a big party planned for just outside the town hall on the Grand Place in Antwerp for, I think, next Thursday. But the club have confirmed today that that's been cancelled because they want to concentrate on the task in hand, which got rather interesting after their win last night, which we'll get to in a minute. That's disappointed a lot of people, but the Antwerp fans are already saying that's because, as you're just alluding to, they are hoping that there's an even bigger party coming in a few weeks. I don't think I'm spoiling anything for anybody who might not have seen the game, who may yet want to go and watch it, in that it wasn't a great game again. I thought it was a little bit disappointing in a footballing sense, certainly better than last year's final, but still not a great game. Antwerp, in truth, winning it without really getting out of first gear, and I felt that Mechelen didn't really even get into first gear. So disappointing were they. Antwerp, kind of deserved winners, possibly could have won it by more, but didn't need to do that much really to kind of get over the line. And one of the most telling things for me was after the game, during the trophy presentation, I did notice Mark van Bommel picking up his medal, because it's medals that everybody gets now. They used to have, those who follow Belgian football will know that all of the players and coaching staff used to get a really, really nice little mini replica of the trophy instead of a medal, but now it's medals instead, which I think is a little bit disappointing. But anyway, as an aside, yeah, so Mark van Bommel picks up his medal and instantly just put it in his pocket as if to go, great, okay, this is nice, but you know, there's other things to do here. They also didn't party long and hard into the night. They had a relatively modest celebration, from what I can gather as well. And I think the message was kind of loud and clear, and that was straight back to work, guys. Because obviously they've got a number of really big games now coming in quite a short space of time with the playoffs. And I've been really, really impressed with Antwerp's focus recently. They're looking really good at the moment. And last night against Union, again, you know, equally impressive and professional. And I wanted to see how they were going to handle things. Often sides in the wake of a big trophy win like that, you know what I mean, can take their foot off the pedal a little bit, but they haven't been given too much time to stop, which I find is really revealing of their real intentions and how seriously they're taking things at the moment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think Van Bommel did look very focused, and he allowed himself to celebrate with them back on it. And I guess for him, though, in a way, it'd be nice that he does take a time to kind of assess and like enjoy it, because it's a nice little vindication for him as a head coach from kind of, he was not belittled a little bit, but there's a lot of criticism of him when he had that great start. I think it was with PSV in the Eredivisie. He then goes to Germany, has a good start and fails. At Antwerp, had a really good unbeaten start, and it started to falter a little bit. And you're like, oh, is this guy just like, what is going on here? Why can he not sustain success? But now he's delivered the cup final, and they had the harder run to the cup for sure, like the teams they played. And we'll speak obviously about what they're doing in playoff one as well. But yeah, I guess we probably shouldn't be surprised that Mechelen didn't score, because they'd failed to score against Antwerp at all this season. So that's three games without scoring against them. And that defence is just so, so good. I feel like we probably haven't spoken enough about their stats in the league, because it's just, what was it, goals against 26 in 34 games? Like, that is incredible. Like, when you think about it, when you compare it to, I think the next lowest is what, Club Bruges with 36. Like, that's a 10-goal difference. And like 36 in 34 games for club, like, that's a good going. Like, you'd take that as one of the best defences in the league, but 26, it's just incredible, isn't it? And I think, obviously, you have to look at who they've got there, and it is Alderweireld and Pacho. Like, those two guys are solid, and at complete opposite ends of their career as well, which is quite nice. But then the fullbacks have played their part as well, obviously, with Richie Delat, Bataille, Sam Vines, Avia as well, when he's not getting into fights or anything like that. Which I feel like he did do against Union last night. We're going to have to talk about that. But congratulations, yeah, obviously, to Antwerp on that. Commiserations to Mechelen. But for Mechelen, I think just getting to the final, it kind of glossed over a pretty poor season for them anyway. And now there's a lot of thinking to do over this next kind of couple of weeks, and they can actually start planning for next year. It's quite ironic, I saw recently that they're interested in bringing back Dries Wolters, and I think that kind of sums up their season a little bit for me, because by December he was told, go find another club. He doesn't. He starts playing again. Then they're like, oh, actually, yeah, we'll keep you. He gives away the penalty in the cup final as well, but that obviously didn't matter to them. And now they're like, oh, we're going to come and bring you back. And it's like, well, it's just baffling direction. Like, who's calling the shots then? Like, who decided he wasn't good enough and now he is good enough? Like, why wasn't he playing? He's been a decent average player anyway, always. Like, what kind of caused you to think he wasn't good enough and then he was good enough? Like, why didn't you give him a chance to prove himself before? Like, it's, yeah, very, very strange. And we could probably, you and I, Scott, could sit here and talk about Mechelen and the things that need to be done at that club in terms of on the pitch for a whole episode. So we won't bore people with that, because obviously there's going to be plenty of time to do that. But I think for Mechelen fans, do you feel like they probably weren't surprised with what happened on Sunday? They kind of went more in hope than expectation.
I think that's my feeling about it. I mean, for those who don't necessarily know Belgian football that well, you know, there's quite a close relationship between Antwerp and Mechelen. You know, obviously they're both from the Antwerp province. The two fan bases actually get on quite well. They share a mutual dislike of Beerschot for reasons that we probably don't need to explain. And yeah, I think they were very good natured afterwards. There was a lovely reception for the Mechelen fans back at the Achter de Kazerne after the game, which was planned regardless of the result, whether it had been a win or a loss. Fans were invited back into the stadium later on in the evening to basically say their goodbyes to the players and staff. And there were some quite warm scenes there, and things like that are always nice to see. And I think from what I could gather, they were quite philosophical about it. I think they had an awareness that they didn't play anywhere near well enough to kind of come away with the trophy. So it's wipe the slate clean and start, you know, getting the head down and preparing hard for a lot of work which he's done over the summer, because they've been linked with some very interesting and quite exciting names, to be honest, which if they can get in, will certainly add some proven quality and obviously resaleable potential as well. You know, should they be able to do that? So they're working hard on that in the background at the moment, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see the first 11 for Mechelen come the summer, that first game of the season, and see kind of who's actually still there and who has moved on. One last thing on the cup final before we move on. The stadium, the King Badawan, it just has such a throwback to old school football for me. Like the distance from the pitch, kind of the way it's shaped. Obviously, I've been watching a lot of like old AFCON footage, and it feels like 80s, 90s football vibes, in the sense of like Balakwisha scores and you just like run across this random bit of like whatever it was, like what you put in the playground to stop kids falling over and hurt themselves. You have to like run across there to celebrate with the fans. It's just like, yeah, that's a very retro feel to it, which, to be fair, again, we could speak about this as well. A lot of the Belgium stadiums do have that retro feel, and they actually do need some revamping to kind of keep up, especially, yeah, the Jan Breydel has been one that's been spoke about quite a lot. One that definitely doesn't need upgrading because it's pretty new is the Galamco Arena. Wasn't full by any stretch of the imagination when Gent played Westerlo, despite Hein van Heijsenbeek bemoaning the lack of fans in the stadium before the game. They then decided to not turn up anyway. Don't know what that says about him or them for that matter. And those that did turn up would have been pretty disappointed with what they saw in the first half, when Matthias Fixels absolutely leathered one in from, must have been 30 plus yards, into the top corner. It's been given as an assist to Ter Dx, but I feel like that it's just not an assist because Fixels literally has to do everything himself. And at that point, you're looking and you're like, well, this opens up playoff two massively. If Vesselo had won, they had kind of been right back in a chance to win it as well. Gent slipping up, not playing well, kind of reminiscent of their performance against East End. But Van Heijsenbeek must have said something at half time, because they came out a completely different team, much more energy, much more tempo, just much more fight, to be honest. Hugo Kuipers didn't get on the score sheet, but he definitely got in the assist column. He squared the ball for Hong's equaliser in the 52nd minute. 3 minutes later, they'd completely turned it around when Sven Kuhn smashed one in from the edge of the box. Gift Orban started on the bench, but he did come on for Tariq Tissoudali in the 76th minute. About 12 minutes later, Kuipers wins a fantastic header, flicks it down to Orban on the edge of the box, on the volley. There's only going to be one result, and it's an absolute rocket pass, Sinan Bola into the back of the net. Gent win by 3-1. And Scott, I feel like that second half should concern the rest of the teams in playoff two, because if Gent can play like that every single game, they'll have absolutely no problems in these playoffs. But if they play it in the first half, they're going to have issues. So for Van Heijsenbeek, it's just finding that consistency of that second half performance. Whereas for the rest of the teams, it's like, right, what did Vesselo do in the first half? We need to replicate that.
Yeah, it's all about the second half, isn't it? And it looked like a bit of history repeating, you know, Gent not being able to turn up again. We spoke, you know, in detail about what happened in the last regular week of the season when they failed to get the win that would have secured a playoff one space, and it looked like they were about to pick up where they left off. Yeah, it would have been very interesting to have been a fly on the wall in that dressing room to hear what Big Hein was saying at halftime. Totally different in the second half. And, you know, it's what we talk about a lot. You know, Gent seem to kind of, turned up again. You know, they look at the moment like early favourites on the basis of the first round of games in playoff two, and it's set up very, very nicely for a big game in PO2 between Gent and Standard at Slessen this weekend. Interesting to hear Ronnie Dyla today at his pre-match press conference talking about how he has a fully fit squad to select from again, which is a nice problem for him to have. But again, a little bit of mind games. He's very complimentary about the Buffaloes, saying that the two previous appearances against them in the league this season had caused them some problems. So I think he really wants to take advantage, Ronnie Dyla, of the home advantage this weekend. I think it's important for Ghent that they win the playoffs. I think that's probably been made clear to them, and that might have been one of the messages that was drummed into them at half-time before this game. So, you know, there's a couple of big games, both in playoff one and two this weekend, that have kind of massive implications. I think this one's going to go to the wire, though. Much like playoff one, it's very, very close. Obviously, Tarek Tisadali is developing his fitness, and that could yet have quite a significant impact on where Ghent end up finishing as well. He's been speaking recently this week about feeling better with each game that he gets as well. So that's all very encouraging for them, because it gives them options, and they're quite active at the moment in the transfer market, preparing for next season, the Buffaloes as well.
Yeah, they've definitely been linked with a couple of players over the last couple of days. Yeah, and you're right about winning playoff two, and now especially with Antwerp winning the cup, like that is a automatic kind of, not obviously or not automatically into the group stages of any of the European competitions, but now you will definitely get a European ticket if you win playoff two, because yeah, Antwerp picked up that one. And I'm not going to go into all the confusing tickets and stuff with European football in Belgium. It's just far too much to kind of dive into now. But basically, win playoff two, you get a ticket into the qualification rounds of the Conference League, I'm pretty sure. Joris isn't here to correct us, so I feel like we can just say whatever we want. He's going to listen back to us and be like, oh, I leave them for one episode and they just start chatting nonsense all over again. You mentioned Standard, and yeah, we'll segue into their game. And I think if they want to beat Ghent, they're going to have to play better than they did against Cercle Bruges. This one finished 0-0, but it didn't feel like a 0-0, because there was so much riding on the game. And you just felt like whoever won this game would have such a good chance to kind of take on Ghent and take on that kind of playoff two spot. I thought we spoke about this before we started recording, that some of the refereeing decisions were a little bit iffy. I have to say, a lot of like people winning the ball and then just getting like taken out after they've won the ball. It's like, it's no longer a 50-50 because one of them's got there first and then they get taken out, but the referee's calling it like a 50-50. A lot of times I found it when Cercle were kind of like, because of the way they play, like you've got those guys in midfield who are looking to kind of win the ball and spring the traps. And they played Francis and Lopez, and those two are very good at doing just that, getting the ball. But then they've got that little burst of speed to get away from the person again. So they win it back, drive forward, and then get taken out and nothing gets called. And you're like, that's the strange decisions that were happening. Cercle, yeah, they probably should have won it, in my opinion, just based on they did have more shots. They seemed to have a little bit more danger, but credit where credit's due. Some of the Standard defending was fantastic, especially on Ueda. He'd get it in the box and you're just waiting for him to stick it in the back of the net, and then a body would just fly out of nowhere to block it. I think Marlon Fossey was not guilty, but like did it quite a lot, where he'd just fly across to make a block, and I think he did quite well doing that. And then Bacardi again made some good blocks and stuff like that. But not the ideal result for either side. I think more of a good result for Standard, just because they've now got Ghent and they can leapfrog them. Whereas for Cercle, it's like if they could have picked up those extra 2 points to kind of drive themselves up a little bit. But looking ahead, they obviously play Vesterlo. If they can beat Vesterlo, Standard and Ghent, if Standard win, they're still in it. If those two draw, they're definitely still in with a chance, because then they'll go and play Ghent back to back. And those are probably going to be the crucial games for Cercle. Like if they win their next three, definitely got a chance. Without winning those next three, I think it could be quite difficult, which is kind of the great thing about the playoffs, and the frustration is like it can slip away from you quite quickly in either direction. But not the worst 0-0 I've ever watched, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And this is probably the longest we've spoken about a 0-0 or summarised a 0-0 ever on this podcast. But two teams that kind of knew that it was an important game. I just felt like Standard defensively were probably is what kept them kind of in this game and kept them with a clean sheet.
Yeah, I think for a 0-0, it was tactically absolutely fascinating. You know, in the lead up to this game, Ronnie Dyla was saying some really interesting stuff about, you know, the way that Cercle play and the importance of holding on to the ball and picking and choosing your moments to use the ball in the right ways. And because of the way that Cercle press you, and they are one of the best sides with kind of high turnovers as well, that, you know, defensively you have to be quite clever when playing Cercle. So, you know, there was a big degree of kind of cat and mouse about this game a little bit, I think. And certainly from a Standard perspective specifically, I think, you know, from a coaching point of view, when I was watching it, I was thinking there's definitely a feeling here of, you know, we're going to try and win this, but, you know, whatever you do, don't lose it. Because the margins are so fine, you know what I mean, as you were just talking about there. So although a draw doesn't really suit either side, things are that tight that it doesn't change the bigger picture too much at the moment. So they both probably came away from it. Circle, you were right, I would agree with you. I think Circle probably deserved the win a little bit more. But again, you know, still being right in the mix, you know, both sides are now kind of sitting in a position where they feel like it's ultimately still all in their own hands. But this was a tactically really interesting game, this, by two sides, I think, who know each other's game kind of quite well and are very respectful of each other's strengths. The one thing as well about these two sides is that Circle have actually got a pretty poor record against Standard. So they went into this game knowing that this was a side that they've not done very well against in a long, long time. So, you know, to be the better side is quite a big positive in itself from Circle's point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they could definitely take a lot from that. Whereas for Standard, maybe they're thinking ahead to this Ghent game. And I do think they'll be better at home. We know they're better against teams that are above them anyway. So it's kind of, what did we really expect? So that left kind of playoff two with Ghent on top on 31, Standard with 29, and the other two on 26 points going into this next round of games. We obviously, with the cup final on Sunday, it was quite strange that we still had a game in the league going on that day. You fill up with a cup final, it should be there's no games going on apart from the cup final, but it's not how it worked. We had Genk against Club Bruges, which was almost as big as it was kind of for Club Bruges. If they had any outside chance of the title, this was kind of their cup final. And they got off to a good start, much like they did in the more previous fixture against Genk back in January. Hans van Aken, who scored on that day, scored again slightly earlier this time, 9 minutes in. Cross to the back post, headed down by Skov Olsen, or knocked back across the edge of the box by Skov Olsen. As it reaches outside the box, Hans van Aken's there and he absolutely leathers it into the bottom corner. Really, really good goal. Joris was just like, this man's record against Genk is ridiculous. He just loves scoring against Genk. But Genk didn't give up. They came back into it and they scored one of my favourite types of goals to see, which is when you get a fullback crossing it to another fullback to score, like, because it's such a rarity. And you're kind of looking around like, who is picking up Munoz? Because, yeah, Arteaga's ball in, Munoz arriving out of nowhere to stick it in the back of the net with 18 minutes gone, made it 1-1. Genk then came out in the second half, just, yeah, really, really going for it. Mark McKenzie with a fantastic header from a Mike Tressel assist made it 2-1. Paintsel looked to have made it 3-1, but an offside was given, and someone needs to enlighten me because I have absolutely no idea where it was. Like, on the gate when I was watching it, like, there was no replay of the offside incident. It was bizarre. So I can't really say what happened on that one. But then he did get his actual goal, 83 minutes, basically the same sort of move, just awful, awful defending. Every time I looked up, he was just destroying Bielers, the 18-year-old, just kept getting turned inside out by Pencil. Just, yeah, really, really struggled to deal with him in this game. 3-1, it finishes for Genk. Massive, massive win for them in the sense of getting back on the right track. For club, that's it. Yeah, pretty much out of the title race. I think, what, they're 11 points behind Genk, so they'd have to win pretty much all of their remaining games to even have a chance and hope that other teams mess up. It's just not likely to happen, that's for sure. But yeah, Scott, impressed with Genk? I certainly was.
Yeah, I thought they were great, and fair play to Club Bruges as well. You know, they started this game like a side who meant business and who knew that they had to really win it if anything was going to turn for them in the playoffs, which I don't think anybody was. I mean, this result obviously puts that to bed now. You know, I think they're out of it, and I think they know that now. But they certainly played their part here, and for good chunks of the game kind of played pretty well. Genk, ultimately the better side, really taking their chances and being pretty efficient, one of our favourite words here, which, you know, you have to do at all levels if you're going to get results, of course. Really interesting game. game for Pansel, Pansel's Revenge, this game. One of the most interesting bits in the game for me was actually when he scored the goal that was given, the second goal, and there was a brief moment where they were checking it, and I think everybody was looking at each other thinking, they're not going to chop this one off again, are they? Because obviously the first one was pretty controversial, I think, to be honest. Not to harp on about VAR at any length, because we've done that enough times already, and I'm sure we will again. But, you know, if you follow any phase of playback far enough, you will find an issue somewhere. And my line with this is, you know, what's the cutoff point for how far back in a phase of play do you actually go? Because there's no communication about that with anybody. Interestingly, this week we saw a referee in League One in France doing a post-match interview where he explained some of his decision-making in a match, which I thought was really, really good. We need to see more of that, I think, for not only for openness and transparency, as we all know, but I think it gives people confidence that, you know, referees are coming from the right place, and that the information that they're using to make decisions is coming from the right place. You know, we need to see more of that. And the fact it's happened in League One in France, in theory, should make it easier to happen in other places now. So that's quite a big deal in itself. But yeah, Genk were really great, and obviously they could have won by more. You know, they had a goal chopped off that, you know, I'm still not convinced. It should have been chopped off at all, regardless of how fine the margins were. It was genuinely a pretty kind of controversial one. I think Wouter Rankin will be absolutely delighted with this, because this was obviously a tricky fixture for them, and psychologically it gave them a really big boost ahead of Union and Antwerp playing, because they're playing, you know, a couple of days earlier because of the cup final. So this ticked all the boxes from his perspective, and will give them a lot of confidence, because although they have had, you know, little rocky moments over the last few weeks, they needed a result here, I think, just to kind of almost convince themselves that, you know what I mean, things were kind of back on track again. And I think they are big time, and it's set up really, really nicely for a huge game at the Bossel this weekend that we'll all be watching.
Yes, absolutely. The game at the Bossel is going to be massive, and that is because of the result of the match between Antwerp and Union during the midweek, obviously, because Antwerp were in the cup final. They didn't need to play that game so soon afterwards. They had to give them a little bit of time to kind of celebrate and then get back on track. And they certainly did get back on track. The performance they put in, I was really impressed with. The focus that they showed. And it sounds weird, but after the cup final, you think maybe their heads are going to be like, we've already got one trophy. But I think, like I said, this is what I was saying about Van Bommel, like the vindication of him as a coach is that he's got them straight back on it to be like, look, we can get another trophy here if you will play and if you will focus. And yeah, they went to Union and kept a clean sheet, which is no mean feat against a very, very good Union Saint-Gilloise side. But more than that, they stifled a Union side that you're used to seeing as kind of like this fun, creative, gung-ho side. They just didn't feel like that. The way Antwerp played against them was just really, really impressive. Akellenkamp, I said about him arriving late in the box. This time it's on a counter-attack. Ball comes out to Yeli Batai. His cross is fantastic. Akellenkamp's run is just as good. Flies in, heads it into the back of the net. Really, really good finish from him. Feel like he's really starting to come into his own, the 23-year-old Dutchman. It became 2-0 about 10 minutes later. Mandela Keita, the man that's been linked with lots of moves abroad recently, he wins the ball back, passes it into Vermeeren, who's pushing a little bit further up, and everyone's starting to talk about him pushing a little bit further up. Keita finds Vermeeren. He flicks around the corner to Keita's continued run. He sticks it past Anthony Morris to make it 2-0. Morris did make a fantastic save in this game, it has to be said, from a Balakwisha shot, tipping it onto the bar. He was given like a 5 rating or 5.4 by one of the papers, which just seemed a little bit harsh, because that save like deserved a couple of points at least. It was a really, really good save. And that's how this one finished. That defence, again, we just got to talk about it. Keeping a clean sheet away to Union is, yeah, it's always pretty impressive. But more than that, it really just sticked them straight into that title race kind of very, very quickly with this game against Genk. And then they'll obviously have a back-to-back against Club Brugge because of the way the fixtures work. Depends where the Club Brugge mindset is at that point. But yeah, and then they'll face Genk in the final game, which could be a massive one. So, and I feel a bit bad that I've maybe cursed Union by being like, they're the best team in the league and I think they're going to win the league. But this game, I was, yeah, I don't know about you, Scott. I was really impressed with Antwerp. And I think Union, they kind of need to get back on track very quickly against Club Brugge and put in a performance that's more Union-y, if you know what I mean. Because we're so used to this side that, yes, they can play badly for 80 minutes, but then the last 10 minutes, they'll do something that you never count them out of any game. But in this one, it just felt like we could have been there all night and they just weren't going to score, which is weird. It's a weird thing to say about a Union side that, like, you'd feel like if the longer the game goes on, eventually they're going to score. But just it didn't feel like that. It felt like a really, really controlled performance from Antwerp.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because that might be, in 2 years of Union being back in the Pro League, that might have been their worst domestic performance that we've seen. And in truth, they were never really in this game at all. You know, a lot of players looked out of sorts. There was a lot of unforced errors from players who don't normally make unforced errors. They weren't able to string anything together creatively. And just the entire team actually looked quite out of sorts, I thought, which was interesting considering they'd had more of a rest as well. You know, there was lots of question marks ahead of this game as to whether that would give Union a slight advantage, with obviously Antwerp being so focused on the cup final. Would that mean that they were a little bit fatigued after that? All of those kind of question marks were hanging over this game, and it was an easy win for Antwerp in the end, and they kind of cut through Union with alarming ease at times. A couple of bad unforced errors leading directly to the goals, of course. And Mark van Bommel's just kind of got everybody, you know, you were talking about their focused as I was earlier as well. He's got everybody, you know, eyes on the prize at the moment. And it's been a big week, actually, for the van Bommel family. Lots of reasons. Obviously, you know, Mark's won his first trophy. Playoffs have kicked off in the right way for them as well. But one of Mark's sons, obviously, signing for Patro Eisden in the Challenger Pro League in the last week or so on a 2-year deal as well. But yeah, Antwerp are just, yeah, their fans, I think, are beginning to believe and actually talk about it now in a way that they weren't until probably the week before the cup final, actually. They've now, since the start of the second half of the season, coming back from the World Cup, they've now picked up 39 out of a possible 51 points domestically in the league, and that's better than anybody else. And it's all founded, as you were saying, on that solid back line, Pacho and Aldevireld, you know, really good partnership. And the thing with Aldevireld is, you know, when he came in, I think a lot of people were a bit sceptical because they thought, okay, tail end of his career, what can he add particularly? Is he still at a level where he can contribute enough? And he's proven, actually, that sometimes when you pay really big wages, which he will be on for somebody in the twilight of his career, the influence and impact of all of that experience and the quality that he does have rubs off on people. And there's a lot of things that probably go on in training and in the dressing room particularly that fans and the media doesn't see that has a massive impact positively on a club on the pitch. And I think there's definitely a lot of that going on because he's been adding goals to his own game recently and has been looking like he's been really enjoying his football and playing with some of these players. So I think there might be something really interesting in playing with some of the younger players in the squad as well that he's really responded to and seems to be enjoying that kind of mentoring role that he's obviously used to. It seems to be working out very well for him, but they're looking really, really good at the moment, and the pendulum is swinging slightly into their corner for me just because of how they're behaving and kind of carrying out their business at the moment. And that's very encouraging to see. And I think Sunday's game at the Bossel now is absolutely massive. And if there is to be a winner in that game, then I think that side are going to be in a very strong place because it'll all entirely be in their hands over the last four games after as to what happens. So it'll be interesting to see if anyone can bag all of the points there.
Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic atmosphere as well, isn't it? I think they've already announced it's a sellout.
Yep, no surprise.
But yeah, which the fixture was back in October when we were over there because we couldn't get tickets. Joris did, and he had to sit with the Antwerp fans. he'll be hoping that they get to experience a similar day that he did in the sense that Genk won away from home, but he had to sit there with his hands firmly underneath his legs and make sure he didn't do any celebrating. Until he saw us in the train station, he was just going crazy. But it's going to be a really, really interesting one. Because obviously in that game, Paul Onuachu was really, really good as well. But they haven't got Onuachu. So we're kind of, it's going to be that classic case, isn't it, where you get the league's best attack with 81 goals and 35 games against the league's best defence with 26 and 35. And it's like, which of these sides wins? It's kind of one of those things they always talk about before, like a Super Bowl final, isn't it? It's like, this team's got the best defence, this team has the best offence. Which one of them's going to do their thing? And usually it's the defence that comes out on top. And I don't know, I'm going to be really interested to see how Genk play this and how Vranken plays it. Like, is he going to be like, okay, like, we understand you're a good defence, we're actually going to sit back and just trying to hit you on the break and be like, look, you're the lowest scorers in this top four. Antwerp are with 61, only one behind Club Brugge with 62, but Brugge were a little bit more defensively fragile, even though their defence is pretty good. But like, Genk knew how to get at them in that sense. Whereas, are they going to try and do the same thing against Antwerp? So I think I'd trust Vranken to do something maybe in this game. But we're interested, yeah, to see if he says, okay, like, have the ball, have that, we'll soak it up and we're going to go. Or are they just going to be like, no, we're going to play the way we play, the Genk way of just, we're just going to push the fullbacks, we're going to push everyone onto you and see if you can deal with that then, and trust that you're not going to counterattack us because we're going to kind of back the pace that we've got at the back and stuff. So it's going to be a fascinating game. I don't really know which way it's going to go at this point, Scott. I think because of the way Genk played against Club Brugge that second half, they were really, really good. First half as well, they were pretty good. And then the way Antwerp played against Union, like two sides coming into it in form. A draw and a Union win is like, for Union, that's the ideal result, is these two sides going against each other, the draw happening, isn't it? Because then they're right back in it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be really fascinating tactically. And I think it's the middle of the park. What's going to happen in there? Because we know how good Antwerp are defensively, but they're very solid in the middle as well. And this season, they've been really very successful against sides who are good offensively. You know, they've had good results against Union and against Genk already this season. And they're just, you know, physically, they're able to compete and stifle sides that like to play an offensive passing game. So, yeah, I mean, will Vranken just stick to their strengths and see if they can cope with that? Or will both sides be happy to, you know, kind of sit off each other? I suspect there'll be a lot of fear insofar as neither side obviously will want to lose this game for understandable reasons. So, you know, a draw isn't the worst result if that's the way this game kind of goes, but there's also a feeling that, you know, as I was saying, if you get a winner in this game, then that side is going to be sitting kind of pretty, almost regardless of what happens with the Union result, because in relation to their game against Club, Union have had a difficult time against Club Brugge and not really been able to lay too much of a glove in terms of getting all of the points off them. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can go to the Jan Breidel and beat Club and get themselves right back into this, because of course they're not out of it by any stretch of the means at the moment, but I think they probably do need a win this weekend regardless of what happens at the Bossel to kind of push this because it's just, yeah, it's getting so kind of so tense and close to call at the moment that almost anything could happen.
All this chat, and we've only had one game of the round. It's crazy. I think, yeah, like what you said about that physicality of Genk, Antwerp, sorry, it'd be really interesting to see, does Vranken chuck in Aziz Itar and Mohamed? Like, does he say, okay, yeah, let's stick some physicality in that central area to kind of deal with, like, because Cater's obviously quite a strong guy. They've got, yeah, like, they are a physical side in there. Yeah, so that Cater, Vermeer and Hayne and Herzowski or Utada, like, that battle is going to be really, really interesting. And then, like, how Antwerp deal with El Canous. Like, do they tell Cater to follow him all game? Like, there's so, we could, yeah, again, like, we could literally sit and discuss the permutations of this game and kind of, like, what we think is going to happen. But watch it, people. I'm pretty sure, I'm not sure if it's what Mola's schedule is yet. I haven't quite seen
it's on.
But I'll be shocked. Yeah, I was going to say, I'd be absolutely shocked. We haven't heard Will Downing for a while either, so hopefully he'll be unleashed to come back and give us some more Belgian football. But either way, it should be a cracking game to watch. So that pretty much, yeah, sums up the Pro League. A strange short segment this week. No challenger football this week, Scott, or this last weekend. But yeah, some interesting chatter coming out from one of the clubs who, let's just say, this week could be a pretty bad week for them, and it seems like they're not going to go down without chucking a few kind of grenades into the boardrooms of other clubs.
Yeah, we've had some interesting news just when we thought it was going to be the quietest Challenger Pro League week for a while, largely because there haven't been any games, obviously, because of the cup final and the playoffs starting. The action kicks off again this weekend, so we'll know more as things reach their conclusion there. But a really big news story today, actually, which has wider implications for the Belgian footballing context and landscape, is that Vertonghen, who are currently sitting bottom of the Challenger Pro League, have confirmed today via a club statement that they're launching a legal challenge to try and overturn the fact that Lommel have been awarded a licence for next season. They want to kind of challenge foreign subsidies to clubs or champion kind of the anti-state funding approach, if you like, of state-running clubs. So they've been talking a lot today in the statement, and we shared the statement on our Twitter account, so go and check it out. But there's lots of talk in that about, you know, competition distortion by state-owned clubs, and obviously, as far as Belgium's concerned, this affects Lommel directly because they're owned by the City Football Group, and obviously Eupen, who are owned by Qatar, the Qatari state, effectively. And yeah, there's lots of nuances here, and it's just very interesting that it's come this particular week, as you were saying, Ben, because if things go against Vertonghen this weekend, their relegation could be confirmed. So, you know, my inner cynic is saying that the timing here has been carefully chosen on their part. But to be fair to Vertonghen's actual argument, this does have a big knock-on effect to things like transfer fees and player wages. You know, Vertonghen's budget, for example, is something in the region of around 5 million euros in total, and they were very unhappy that, you know, Lommel were allowed to have a capital injection of around supposedly 16 million, which I doubt very much is going to be invested directly on the pitch. But they felt this was against kind of competition rules, and not only are they launching this legal challenge to try and overturn Lommel's licence in their favour, I suspect, but they've also obviously launched an official complaint as well with the European Commission in Brussels, in order to try and end kind of foreign subsidies that what they call today distorting football markets and the natural ecosystems of football. But I mean, it's worth mentioning as well that this has a wider impact on the Belgian landscape, because at the moment we know there's this state of flux at Oostend. The owners at Oostend, Pacific Media Group, who are a multi-club ownership model, they're looking to sell Kortrijk, owned by Vincent Tan. And they're looking for new owners, and a contact of ours this week confirmed who the one remaining party actually is. Oostend and Kortrijk both deep in negotiations with prospective new buyers at the moment. Oostend's one's quite controversial because obviously it's the Saudi group who owns Newcastle, who appear to be the leading party interested there. So that plays right into Vertonghen's argument. But then outside of that, Ghent are looking for new ownership, as are Beerschot, and then there are two other clubs that are at the very least looking for new capital injections, and who, depending on the right party, might be open to new ownership. And that's Zulte Waregem, who've been looking for a while, and Mechelen, who, although not directly looking for new owners, are certainly looking for a new capital injection, and have an understanding that, you know, they may yet in the future have to join a multi-club ownership model in order to continue growing the club and remain competitive. So although this is perhaps a slightly cynical move on Vertonghen's part and a last-ditch tactical play to kind of stay in the division, they do raise some interesting points, which obviously football fans are talking about on and off all the time, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. They could have implications for a longer down the line. Although there was quite a funny comment on Twitter that we translated from, I think it was Koen Vermeulen. He said, "A season of Belgian football without a legal story is like a pub without a beer or a baker without bread." So, I mean, he's kind of spot on, isn't he? Because it feels like every year something's happening, if it's with the licensing or it's...
Yeah.
It seems that Mouscron seemed to be the ones that wanted to always kind of mess around at the end of the season and give us all these legal things, unfortunately for them. But yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. And I think, yeah, the kind of names that keep getting banned around, like Bournemouth seem to be getting linked with buying every single club. I think Nieuwsblad said that Burnley wanted to buy Kortrijk, and then Vincent Tan showed them how much he wanted, and they were like, absolutely not. We're not doing that. But that's that again, that's another one that's looking like he needs to get out of that club, basically, because he doesn't, it's just from what people are saying, he just doesn't care about it anymore, which is just not really fair, because it's his, he owns the club, but the club is also owned, it's the fans that make the club, isn't it? And it's not really fair to have someone in charge of your club who doesn't care about the club. It's quite a rotten situation. So fingers crossed, some good news will start coming through for the Kortrijk fans, and I'll actually get a head coach and do all that sort of stuff.
We also had some other news this week as well, didn't we, Ben? Because we now know the identity of two of the three clubs who have been promoted from the First National to next season's Challenger Pro League. So Patro Eisden, who we mentioned earlier, who Mark Van Bommel's son has just joined in a two-year deal. Patro Eisden have been promoted. They will play in the CPL next season, as well a historic tradition club who've not been around for quite a while in RFC Liège. Who are quite interesting for a number of reasons, actually, because they've won five previous Pro League titles, in fact, including the very, very first one way back in 1896. They won three of the first four, 1896, 1898, 1899, and then they won another couple back-to-back in 1952 and 53. So they've done some stuff in the game. Historic club. Matricule number four, RFC Liège, which from those of you who love your matricule numbers will know that that means they are the fourth side to have joined the Belgian FA, which was founded in 1895. So they're one of the oldest Belgian clubs. Were around for a very long time. In fact, they were only relegated from the Pro League, I think, in 1995, and fell down the divisions, got into financial troubles, as a lot of clubs do, another recurring theme in Belgian football. But they've been promoted, and it's nice to have them back because, you know, they are, as I was saying, a historic tradition club who've done things. And interestingly as well, you might have heard of them because way back in 1990, everybody knows about Jean-Marc Bosman, don't you, everybody? Well, Jean-Marc Bosman used to play for RFC Liège, and in 1990, Jean-Marc wanted to leave the club, and the club said no and refused to release him, and that led to the Bosman ruling, which, as we now know, has changed football forever. So particularly interesting connection there. And if you want to find out more about that, go and read James Kelly's brilliant book on Belgian football, Golden, because James has got an entire chapter on Bosman and RFC Liège and that whole story. But it's a warm welcome back to them at a higher level. And that means there'll be another Liège derby of sorts, doesn't it, Ben? Because they'll get to play Serang next season.
Yeah, no, it's good to have them back. And I mean, they were close last season, weren't they, to coming back up. So be good to talk a little bit more about them, and of course Patrick Eisden as well. Seems like a little bit of a return for some of the former big clubs, doesn't it? I think Lokeren, the newly formed Lokeren, are top of the league below the one, obviously, that Liège have come back up. So that'd be good to see them back after what they had to go through, because that's another side that until recently were actually, yeah, European football bound and all that sort of stuff. So for you kind of footballing hipsters out there, there's so many clubs down the tables that you can check out. I mean, we were laughing about one about Alst the other day because we found that there's a team nicknamed the Onions and they had an onion. So yeah, if you're ever bored, dive into the wild world of lower reaches of Belgian football if you ever want to look at some funny mascots and some weird nicknames for clubs. But we won't do any of that because we're pretty much done for this episode. Scott, as always, it's been a pleasure.
It always is. Never a dull day here at the BFP. And with it being a little bit later, this episode dropping, we'll be back with you sooner than you might think.
Absolutely. It'll be normal schedule resumed next week because all the games will actually be taking place on the weekend. So we won't have to worry about waiting into the depths of the midweek before we can record. It'll be a little bit earlier. But as always, we hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you have, do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. Also get in touch with us if you have any questions after the first round of matches and the cup final. And yeah, that's probably about it. So as always, thank you for listening to this episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.